Hey there, tax fans. Welcome to State Tax Talks with me, your host, Joe Tantillo. I'm a tax attorney at the Hotch & Russ Law Firm looking to explore the nuances of state and local tax law. Here on the show, our goal is to keep tax informative, simple, and fun. So if you're ready to talk tax, turn up the volume and dive into this episode of State Tax Talks. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of State Tax Talks. I am your host, Joe Tantillo, and I am joined today by our panel of Liz Pascal and Chris Doyle, both longtime friends of the pod. Liz, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Joe.
Thanks for having us.
Or welcome back, should I say. And you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to have you both on today. We are going to be discussing the comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are something that has plagued accountants for, what, 2 years now, 3 years, but has become quite the little annoyance to many, but also of great use to others. We're going to be going through the ins and outs today, the nuts and bolts, if you will, to steal a phrase from Noonan's notes. I don't know if he coined that, but...
Of course he did.
Certainly he used it with high frequency. So yeah, we'll be talking a little bit about what the pass-through entity tax is, how we got here, why we need it, who it's useful for. But, you know, as a very, very, very brief overview, Liz, why don't you tell our listeners just like at the highest level, what is the pass-through entity tax or what is a pass-through entity tax?
Sure, Joe. So the pass-through entity tax is a tax that is imposed on a pass-through entity, which is a partnership, an LLC, or a subchapter S corporation. And what it does is it essentially moves the tax from the individual owners to being incurred on the entity itself. And do you want me to talk a little bit about the reason for that? Or maybe, Chris, do you want to...
Yeah,
why don't we
dive right into the reason? I know that this kind of stems back to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and there's a little bit of the SALT deduction cap in there. But Chris, why don't you tell us the history, if you will?
So before getting into the history, the reason that we have pass-through entity taxes is so that Liz and I can send our kids to college. The generational event that created the need for a pass-through entity tax was the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, effective 2018. And what that did was created something called the SALT cap, the state and local tax cap. Prior to that law, folks that itemized deductions could claim a full deduction for all of their state and local taxes. And after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the state and local taxes could only be deducted to the extent of the first $10,000 of them that you paid. So your income taxes and your property taxes on your home, if they exceeded $10,000, you started losing the benefit of that. That, by the way, only lasts until the end of 2025. So to the extent that we're talking about this, it's only a arguably temporary situation. If you assume that the law will be able to sunset as it's currently scheduled to do, however, there's a possibility that that law will be made permanent as well.
So if you're listening to this episode in the future, you either really, really are just super interested in this topic or it was perhaps extended.
If you're listening to this in the future, thank God the Bills finally won the Super Bowl. And the Sabres won the Stanley Cup.
In the same year.
In the same year. It's amazing. I know. So anyway, what happened as a result of that is, of course, people that had big state and local tax liabilities, including people that had partnership interests in partnerships and S-corporation shares and S-corporations, had to pay a lot more federal tax because their state and local taxes, for the most part, were no longer deductible. That led to a lot of states... Because the states have no axe to grind here, right? It's just a federal government revenue issue.
Well, I should also say it is the states don't have sort of an axe to grind, except that it impacts the most high tax states like New York, New Jersey, California, Maryland. And so those states had a concern that people were already saying, oh, taxes are so high in my state. This was just one more thing that was going to raise their overall tax bill and make people start thinking about moving to a lower tax jurisdiction.
Was there some sort of justification for the imposition of the cap on the SALT deduction in the first place?
Well, there was a revenue need. So the federal government has a revenue need. I would say that there are people in the majority of states, perhaps not by population, but by number, that would say, you know, why should the federal government subsidize citizens of the high tax states? Because that's what it essentially is. If you get a state tax deduction, it's almost like the federal government is paying 30% of your tax liability for you to your state. So I think that people that were in low tax states or no tax states like Texas and Florida, they thought, well, you know, why should we be footing the bill so that New York and California can have great schools? So anyway, back to what I was saying before about the origins of the pastoral entity tax. States started to come up with various schemes to allow folks to work their way around. There were credits for, you know, charitable contributions that you made to charities that were created by states that allowed you to, for lack of a better term, launder your state tax liability and get a credit that would not be subject to income tax federally, while your charitable deduction was deductible fully for federal purposes.
Oh, and let's not forget the New York's employer expense compensation. I can't even remember the name of it.
Right.
It kind of died on the vine pretty much.
It was a short-lived experiment. Fast forward to the fall of 2020, when the IRS issued something called Notice 2020-75, in which it said that it's working on regulations that will respect, because there was some question as, you know, what about taxes imposed on S corporations and partnerships now? And there are, you know, there were some that preceded the pastoral entity taxes. California's got a 1.5% tax on S corporations. New York City's got a tax on unincorporated businesses that pre-existed the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. There were folks that wondered whether those taxes would still be deductible. And this notice 2020-75 said, sure, those taxes are deductible. If you have a tax at the entity level, at the partnership level, or the S corporation level, those taxes will still be deductible for federal income tax purposes by the owners of those entities. So then the state said, well, if those taxes are deductible, the unincorporated business tax, the S corporation tax in California, let's just create other taxes that look like those taxes and push the liability from the individual owners for the state and local taxes up to the entity level, and then either give those shareholders or owners a benefit through a income tax exclusion or a credit method to push the benefit of those deductible taxes down to the individuals. And that's how PTETs came into being.
And I think even before Notice 2020-75 was issued, a couple of states like Connecticut and Rhode Island had actually already enacted their pass-through entity taxes. And maybe this is getting a little bit ahead of ourselves, but Connecticut was interesting because I think they were trying to kind of hedge their bets as to whether the IRS would allow it as a deduction. And so they had a mandatory component and an elective component. So there was a component that looked more like these legacy taxes that Chris was just talking about, the California franchise tax, the New York City unincorporated business tax, but it also had a component where you could elect into it. And we'll talk more about that, I'm sure.
Absolutely, we will. And so now this pass-through entity tax kind of becomes the workaround or bypass of this imposition of a cap on limiting the SALT deduction. And there's, I think, what, all but six states that have a personal income tax that have imposed a pass-through entity tax in their state? Something like that. I don't know if that's...
Something like that. It's about half the states that have a pass-through entity tax.
36 states and one in New York City have a pass-through entity tax. And so half of the states that haven't passed a pass-through entity tax don't have a personal income tax, so it's not really an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half are thinking about it.
Yeah, and I think that like three of the six or a number of the ones that don't have one have pending legislation. I think like D.C. has pending legislation.
Pennsylvania has thought about it. Maine.
It could be right. Don't quote us, especially if you're listening to it in the future. The beautiful thing about this podcast is everyone is listening to it in the future. So we were right for the time that we existed in.
Yes. And we can also edit it.
Yes. Right. So obviously these have been very popular. And I think before we dive into some of the mechanics of how it works, have these taxes themselves generated any revenue for the states that have instituted them? Or do they really just work as this mechanism to reduce the federal tax liability of their residents?
So I don't know that there's a definitive answer to that. I think for the most part, it is more of a timing issue than anything else, because the pass-through entity taxes get paid all at once, although, you know, the timing may be sort of the same as with estimated payments. And many states like New York, California impose the PTET, as it's called, at the highest marginal rate. So then they may have to issue refunds to the individuals when we talk about the credit. So, you know, there may be a timing issue, but I do think that, you know, there may be instances. I'm trying to think if there are some instances where
I think Connecticut and Massachusetts give you a credit that's less than the tax
that's paid. That's right, right. That's right.
So there's
a
couple states out there anyway.
And California only allows a like 5-year carry forward of the overpayment of the credit. So for some states, that's a good point. For some states, it is a revenue raiser. And for other states that give a full credit, a little bit less so.
Interesting. Well, there's, as we've alluded to, many, many states that have these pass-through entity taxes. We are going to focus in this next portion on the mechanics of New York's pass-through entity tax, although I'm sure we'll throw in some comparisons to how other states works as well. Let's start with eligibility. Who is eligible, or what entities are eligible for the pass-through entity tax? And more importantly, who is not eligible?
So S corporations are eligible for the New York State, but not the New York City, pass-through entity tax.
And unless all of the shareholders are residents of the city.
Unless all the shareholders are residents of the city, right? Any partnership-treated entity like a LLC that's got multiple members, any partnership that's called a partnership, any foreign eligible entity that's got multiple members, all of those could be eligible for the pass-through entity tax. The only sort of pass-through entity that would not be eligible is a sole proprietorship. So that if you've got a Schedule C individual taxpayer that's got a single member limited liability company or just goes naked without any entity whatsoever, those are pass-through entities, I suppose, from some respect, but they're not eligible for the pass-through entity taxes. In addition, there are some owners that might limit the availability of the PTET. So if you've got in New York a partnership that has corporate owners, the individual owners you get the PTET for, but for the non-individual owners other than certain trusts and estates, you don't get the PTET. So if you've got a partner that is a partnership or a corporation, you don't get a PTET calculation with respect to those owners.
And that makes the math really fun when you're calculating the PTE right. taxable income.
Right. I should also say trusts are not PTET eligible entities, right? A trust can be an owner that whose share gets included in the calculation of the pass-through entity tax. They get the credit, but a trust cannot file a PTET return and make the election.
Even though they are, in certain respects, flow-through entities.
Correct.
So can an eligible entity that is formed after the annual election deadline opt into the PTET for that year?
No.
There's a lot of simple answers in some of the questions that will be posed. And yet there's a whole book of FAQs online because people keep asking them. All right. Who can make the election on behalf of an eligible PTE?
So only the owner of the entity or someone who has the authority to act on behalf of the entity. So the way the election works in New York is every entity has to have a New York online account. The election can only be made through that online account and can only be made by the entity, someone who can act on behalf of the entity. It cannot be made by a power of attorney. I cannot make the election for one of my clients, and accountants cannot make an election on behalf of their clients, only the entity themselves.
I know that there are a lot of accountants who find that frustrating. Is there a reason why the election mechanic was set up that way?
I can only guess at the answer that it, one, because it's irrevocable. So once they make the election, you know, that's it. And I can think of no other good reason.
Interesting. But again, it's only irrevocable for that year, right?
Correct.
So limited risk. But for now, accountants, you can't do it. We can't do it. It's got to be someone who has authority to act for the PTE. So with the election in mind, when is the deadline? And if all goes according to plan, this episode will be coming out around February 20th of 2024. So people may be listening to it for information about what they need to do.
For the 2024 tax year, the election, unless the law changes, and that's possible, deadline is March 15th of 2024.
And there is legislation that's been introduced into the assembly that proposes to change the election due date to September 15th rather than March 15th. But right now, that's only a bill that's been introduced and nothing more. So again, in the future, that answer might be different, but currently it's March 15th.
And how does, well, you already said that the election is done via the taxpayer's online account. Is there a specific portal within the account? Is it, do they have to go digging for it, or is it relatively simple to find?
So I will say that it is relatively simple to find if you're sort of a longstanding, you know, you've already filed returns as a partnership or as an S corporation. Where we see problems is if, for example, in the prior year, it was a disregarded entity, right? So it wouldn't be eligible to make the PTET election. And the owner decides, hey, I'd like to be eligible for the PTET. There's reasons I want to bring in a partner. I'm going to bring in a partner. And so now it's a multi-member LLC. Well, if that entity hasn't filed a return yet, the account is still set up as if it were a disregarded entity. So there won't even be an option of making the PTET election. So that's one of those things. If, you know, if it's February and you're listening to this and you haven't made the New York S election or you weren't previously a multi-member entity, get that straightened out with New York. Reach out to New York State. There's a PTET helpline, and do it well before March 15th, because otherwise you're going to go into that online account and not be able to make the election.
This has come up for me, I think, every single year since I've been a practicing attorney, where we've had someone trying to make an emergency New York S election right before the, like within a week of the PTET election deadline. Did they still have that trick where if you write PTET on the S election form, they expedite it? I didn't think so. I figured that was gone.
So the first year, right, because to make the S election, that form is due March 15th, right? And so the first year people were sending it in and they said, well, just write PTET on the top and we'll process it really quickly, get your online account fixed so you can make the election. After that, they were like, guys, you should have known this. This is on our website. We've made this perfectly clear. So no, we're not going to promise you. You might get lucky, but we're not going to promise you that we're going to process that form in time.
So do not leave it until the last minute, or even close to the last minute, preferably. Give yourself time. Because, and is my next question, which is basically already been answered, is there any extension to the election deadline under any circumstances, notwithstanding the possible law change?
The practical answer is that we haven't seen it. The legal answer is that the commissioner has discretion. But the commissioner, as far as we know, has never exercised their discretion to extend the time limit for filing the election.
And I believe that the commissioner believes, or acting commissioner believes, that she does not have the discretion. In any case, in all practical terms, as Chris said, we have not seen it and we have asked.
Right. And for those out there listening who are partners of partnerships or involved with PTEs who are filing on a fiscal year or an off-calendar year basis, election deadline is the same, correct?
Correct.
Right. And the tax year is a calendar year as well. So it's kind of a weird sort of situation.
That's what makes it funky is that the – so if you have the PTET taxable year is the year that the fiscal year ends, right? So the return that is filed is that entity's fiscal year that ends in – you know, if you had a fiscal year that ended February 28th, 2023, right, that would be the 2023 PTET year for that entity, they would still – but the filing due dates and the election deadline are both calendar-based. So it's weirdly off-cycle.
Right. Estimated payments as well based on
– Yeah, estimated payments are still calendar-based.
Yeah, that's funky.
So in your example, what was the deadline where you've got a tax year that ended February 28, 2023? What was the deadline for filing the election?
March 15th of 2023.
So after the year closed.
Correct.
Okay.
So they get the benefit.
We told you this was complicated, folks. And that's probably just because that most PTEs are not filing on a fiscal year, right? That's less common amongst PTEs than C corporations, I would imagine.
Yes, that's less common. Yeah.
All righty. I think this is a good point to bring the conversation to a pause. We've got a lot more to discuss, but we'll have to pick it up next time where we will be discussing part two of our conversation on the pass-through entity tax. Until then, this is State Tax Talks. I have been Joe Tantillo. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us for another episode of State Tax Talks. If you're interested in listening to more episodes, we're available on all platforms where podcasts can be found, including YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode of State Tax Talks with Joe Tantillo, please give us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform. And if you're in need of a tax professional, you can contact the tax attorneys at Hodgson Russ. Go to www.hodgsonruss.com for more information. And until next time, I'm Joe Tantillo, and this is State Tax Talks. Catch you later, tax fans. The comments contained in this podcast do not constitute legal advice. The opinions herein are the opinions of the speakers and not the official opinion of the Hodgson Russ Law Firm.